that scale comparison is we took an aerial photograph of the study area and we showed them what their community would look like at their current land use proposed densities and intensities at build-out. And we, on purpose, called this the do-nothing scenario, which means if you do absolutely nothing, because a lot of people in Florida think they're there, it's time to close the gates, if we don't plan, if we don't do anything else, we'll be fine, just go away, don't plan our area. So we did this, and we called it the do-nothing scenario, because we had a lot of that going on when we first reached the community. Again, I-95 is right here, and the dotted line is the urban service boundary. And first we showed them how the area inside the urban service boundary would fill out. And under their current regulations, it was all gated subdivision, strip commercial, some office, some industrial, absolutely no green, no open space, no agriculture, none of the reasons they had moved up there. Then we showed them at one unit to the acre and the 41 million square feet of commercial how that area that we were asked to look at, the 28 square miles, would fill up. And this is, you know, taken from other areas in the region that are planned exactly with those same rules. We weren't cheating when we were showing them these images. And when they saw everything covered, they started to panic. Said, well, we have a problem in our study area, but beyond our study area, we're protected. So we created yet another image that showed them that beyond their study area, they had one unit to the acre for another about 10, 15 miles out west, and then it was five units to the acre all the way to Lake Okeechobee and to the end of the world. So this shocked them. This said, well, we can't not do anything. We have to do something. So we did have a charrette. It was a seven-day charrette. About 350 people showed up. They were mean. They were angry. They were furious because they had figured out that the reason they had moved up there that was a lie. And a lot of the residents were telling us, well, but we had agricultural zoning. Can't you just take away the land use and just leave us with agriculture? And of course, it was a long educational process, but the things we found when we got to them are, I'm sure, the things you find when you go into any community. The residents wanted to protect the rural lifestyle. It was the reason they had moved up there to begin with. They had problems with drainage, and they wanted those solved, and more units and more density would make that worse. So they wanted that resolved before anyone else moved in. They wanted predictability. Again, their orange groves were being converted into conventional subdivisions, and that was not why they had moved up there. They had three paved roads, almost no development, and those three paved roads were already failing, so they wanted to make sure that anything that came had to meet concurrency. And they absolutely wanted to keep the urban service boundary. They did not want to, you know, start jogging that line every time a developer came in front of the commission to try and get exceptions and start building into the countryside. We, of course, had the developers who had invested in the community, had been waiting for 2 years. The county had been doing a number of other studies, a study on moving the urban service boundary, which triggered everyone and their brother to go out there and buy land outside the urban service boundary. And developers had been patiently waiting, and a number of other studies, and they had been waiting for about 4 years. So the first thing we heard from all of them is, like, geez, when are we going to be able to do something? We were told to come here. We were invited to come to your community. And right now, you know, we've just been waiting for years. We want you to move the line because once you move the urban service boundary, we're going to get services. And because, you know, you don't want us to be doing one unit to the acre and well and septic. That's, you know, the oldest threat of any developer is, I'm going to do this and I'm going to put it on well and septic. They, of course, wanted services and they wanted to be able to move forward. And then there was staff and the county and the elected officials who had a plan that did not respect the community's vision, that did not do what they had promised the developers they were going to allow them to do, and really did not know what direction to go in, and of course were being yelled at by both groups constantly, so they were having a pretty miserable existence when we got to the county. So the result of the charrette was that the community understood that it wasn't about closing the gates anymore, it wasn't about growth versus no growth, it was inevitable that growth was coming, particularly in their area because they had already slated that entire area with some sort of entitlements. We hate to call them entitlements if they're part of your future land use map. But What they did decide is that they were going to have a very strong opinion on how growth was going to happen. If they had to live with those 22,000 units and the 41 million square feet of commercial, they were going to decide what form that was going to take. And they did decide that the most important thing for them was to, above all, keep the rural feel, the rural character of the community. They didn't care anymore that the development was going to happen as long as they could keep the urban feel and so the character that had, made them pick this place as their home to begin with. So this is the master plan that resulted from the charrette. Again, in the dotted line is the urban service boundary. I-95 is right here and Florida's Turnpike. And what you see are, a series of towns and villages and a lot of green and a lot of open space. So rather than, again, that do-nothing scenario where these units were spread out throughout the entire countryside, it was all compacted into towns and villages. And, this seems like a very obvious solution. The problem is we had, 1,800 different property owners. So how do you make a town when you have not one, but 1,800 different property owners in this area? Just a few of the key elements of this new vision that the citizens had. Number one, above all, as development occurs, vast areas of countryside have to occur. They would not accept development to come in without open space. As development occurs, they needed to treat water not in the form of isolated ponds, but as a comprehensive system so that as the area got built out, the county ended up with one of the largest water treatment systems and recreational systems in the region. So each town and each development had to be plugging into the previous development in this form of water management system, which the community calls the flowway. The next thing that was very important to them is that as this flowway happened and as the countryside happened when every town was coming in, the green spaces, the open space, had to connect. You couldn't have it all scattered. It had to connect the green spaces from the different towns, and it had to add up to really valuable space. Because this space was going to be connected and because this space was going to add up, there would be an opportunity to continue with agricultural uses. Jim Kunstler has given many presentations in our region, and I think the community really understood that buying lettuce from California and shipping it to Florida was not going to be an option, in the long term. So they were very adamant about having the ability to farm if they did need to farm in the future. Their two roads were failing, so they wanted to make sure that the new roads came in at the same time or even before all the development came in. So the new network of streets was established from the very beginning. The locations for all public, institutional, retail, workplace uses were established based on that network of streets. You know, where your main and main streets were to intersect, that's where the new commercial and workplaces were going to go. I'm going to go really fast through the next slides, and I'll probably just answer questions. And in order to achieve this new settlement pattern, there was a transfer of development rights system that was incorporated, and I'm not going to talk about that because Tom Daniels is in the audience and your session is the next one, and I know you're going to go into this. But the transfer of development rights was one of the tools to move all of those entitlements into these special areas, into these designated areas, and form those towns and villages that the community wanted. Like I said before, all the animations were great to define scale. This was the one, I don't know why it didn't work, I apologize, but this was the scale that that the community sort of accepted, going from estate homes at the edge of the towns and villages into townhouses and apartments as you got closer to the center, and then mixed use around squares or plazas or greens as the core of each community. These were critical because we had other animations that showed more intensity, more height, and the community very quickly dismissed those. And so these are the ones that we used, again, to translate height and density and intensity into the comprehensive plan. So this was the big picture and the vision. And everyone was happy with the vision, and the Board of County Commissioners voted 5-0 to adopt the vision and then said, well, you know, this is great. The problem is, how do we implement the vision? Which is what happens, I'm sure, to all of you after you go to a charrette. You have a great vision, and then there's really no tools to implement it. And at that time, we were all very excited because the county set aside $1 million and told the Regional Planning Council, go ahead and give us the best comprehensive plan you can possibly create. Hire whoever you need to hire. So we were in paradise. We started going through the list of, you know, great retail consultants and housing consultants and, you know, transportation consultants for them to help us create this this new operating system. What we didn't realize was that at that point the honeymoon was over. The honeymoon was over because at this point a lot of the people that did not buy into the concept, that still wanted business to continue as usual, started to challenge this and started to fight this. And you know, one of the first things that happened to us, if you know who Wendell Cox is, the opposition hired Wendell Cox to come to one of our local planning and zoning meetings. And of course, we're all sitting there getting ready to give the LPA a great presentation, and we see Wendell Cox come in with a presentation. We all started to panic, and you know, someone's like, who has Andres's number? Please call him. What do we need to know before we start? And what was interesting, I was told he got paid $25,000 to go and trash the TVC. What's interesting is after the fifth slide, he had managed to turn around the two members that were opposed to the TVC and get them to understand why it was so important for us to do this. So if you panic, if you see him show up, you don't need to dial 1-800-ANDRES. You just, you know, just wait and listen because he'll help you. But anyways, we went ahead and created the comprehensive plan, and I'm almost done. I know I have 1 minute left. What's important about this is I'm just going to show you very quickly the things that are now embedded in this new form-based comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan states very clearly that if any other area in the county is going to be planned, it has to be done with a high degree of citizen participation. And the next points that I'm not going to go through very clearly explain in detail what a charrette is. So at the level of the comprehensive plan, a charrette is explained. You have to do that if you want to plan any other area in the county. You can't do a fake. You absolutely have to do that. The comprehensive plan defines how the open space that the community wants and believes is the most important objective is defined. Like I said at the beginning, you know, the neighborhood is the basic planning unit. So there's a minimum 500-acre parcel size if you want to develop a town or a village. If you have the 500 acres, great, you can go ahead and submit your plans. If you have, you know, 100 acres, you have to get together with a couple other property owners to reach the 500 acres in order to be able to develop a village. But essentially, we started off by figuring out that if a neighborhood, you know, the quarter-mile radius is about 125 acres, you would need 125 acres to be built. But in order to accommodate everything else that the community wanted, which was the flowway and the greenway and the land for agriculture and areas for biodiversity and recreation, there was a need for at least another 375 acres for each 125 acres of developed land. So that resulted in a minimum of 75% open space requirement at the densities we were dealing with in that area, 75% open space requirement for every village. And then as an incentive for people to build more sustainable areas, to build towns instead of villages, we reduced the open space requirement to 60%. 60% open space, 40% built environment for towns, 75% open space for villages, 25% built environment. So if you have 500 acres, which is the minimum parcel size to build a village, and you are going to build one neighborhood of 125 acres, you know, of course, the first thing we heard from developers is, you guys are crazy. We were asked to leave 30 to 35% before. You're asking us to leave 75%. Why on earth would we do that? Not only that, you're asking us to have a minimum density requirement outside the urban service boundary of 5 units to the acre before we can start to build, not 5 units to the acre for the entire village, which translates into about 2,000 units before you can get started, and leave all this open space. They were saying, why would we do that? Well, you are going to do that because you are going to get services if you do that, even if you're outside the urban service boundary, and you are going to get additional density because guess what? You have a minimum density requirement. There's absolutely no maximum density requirement. So developers' eyes opened this big. And what was interesting, I'll tell the last anecdote, I'll go through the other slides fairly quickly, was that those that opposed the TVC then would come to the commission, now this time the developers, not the community, and tell the commissioners, be careful, you're increasing density, you do not want to do that, this is bad. The trick was they didn't want to be required to hit a sustainable amount of density before they broke ground. And behind them, the residents would stand in line and tell commissioners, we don't care that you're increasing the density. We want our 75% open space or 60%. Let them build whatever they want in their 25 or 40%. That was pretty unique. In the open space, what the community asked for is the flowway areas to treat reuse water within the actual area of development. Areas for recreation, areas for agriculture, areas for research and development, areas to restore natural habitat, natural edges, biodiversity, and areas for higher education like universities or other research areas. The minimum density is acquired through TDRs. Like I said, I'm going to let Tom Daniels go through that in his presentation. Transfers internal from within the parcel as well as transfers external. People are allowed to buy units from other landowners that do not want to build towns and villages and increase the densities in their own towns and villages. I just explained this before. If you want to build a town, or excuse me, if you want to build a village, chances are that once you're done transferring all your internal development rights, you're still a few hundred units short. That means you have to either go out, buy units from other property owners and help preserve and protect and clean up the countryside, or provide other things that the county has as part of their objective, like other agricultural-related research or higher education. These are just some pages from the comp plan. I have like three more slides, I promise. And like I said, all the comprehensive plan, all the charter principles are mandated at the level of the comprehensive plan. These are graphics from the comprehensive plan that clearly explain the size and how a neighborhood needs to be designed, how civic buildings need to be placed. The commission decided that it was, Camilo Cite had done a very pretty good job, so they decided just to incorporate his graphics in the comprehensive plan as to how civic buildings had to be placed. The transect is embedded in the comprehensive plan. The video is not in the comprehensive plan, but the transect is, which of course talks about maximum height, how height is, reduced through the zones as you approach the edge of the town and the village and get into the flowway. In case the transect was not clear enough, the comprehensive plan also has a very detailed diagram of how a town should be built that shows where the center, the core, the edge, the flowway, and the open space are located. It has instructions on how villages and towns are to be built, where the village center needs to be, the walking distance radio, where the countryside is, where schools need to be located within each town. As you combine villages to form a town, it also explains very clearly and graphically how these villages are to be combined, how development needs to be established and settled to make sure that the open space and... How the network of streets is established, where the commercial and the workplace are established. I learned from Busha. There you go. And this is the last slide. And so finally, with this new urbanist or form-based comprehensive plan, there are two additional documents, the one that Tom Daniels created, which is the Transfer of Development Rights Ordinance that supports this type of development, and the land development regulations, which last night we were very happy, like you said, received the Driehaus Award that support, again, this new urbanist comprehensive plan. We had a great team. I mentioned some of them at the very beginning. You can go to our website and get more details of this and of the other team members. So sorry I went over. Thank you.
Thank you. We have time for a few questions. There's some questions in the audience for the three excellent speakers. I can leave you time. Yes.
The question is, are the graphics for the building prototypes going to be included in the comprehensive plan? It's unclear at this point whether they'll be part of the comprehensive plan, but the city is going to use these as a tool in their future planning. And actually, the idea is that as new development comes in, developers, as part of their development application, will actually be required to do a SketchUp model that then the city can plug into its GIS base. So that they can, for each project that comes in, they can show exactly what it looks like and get community support or not, or ask the developer then to modify the plan. So the idea is that rather than just sort of a one-off graphic that shows a pretty picture, that it gives them an interactive tool that they can use in the future.
Yes, ma'am.
I have two.
Could you just stand up though?
Yes.
I actually think for the first question, how do you translate the comp plan into the code? I think the way that we've all showed it actually makes a very clear connection between that. It depends. I think it depends on the process. Ideally, what you'd want to do is you'd actually want to have the coding team as part of the comprehensive plan update team, and you do them concurrently. We're about to start a project in California, and Dan Perolik of Opticos, who's here, is going to be doing the form-based code at the same time as we're doing the comprehensive plan.
You pair up.
And then I think the other thing is, in terms of how do you train staff, it's tricky, but you have to bring them along their strategies. You can have town architects to train them and to review if there's not expertise in-house. I think there is a huge deficiency in the planning profession that planners aren't trained to understand design. We're trained to understand land use, and that has to change.
Can I add to that? I would agree with you. I mean, you keep, for the first question, is you keep the team that was working initially. In the case of St. Lucie County, what they did is they realized that, number one, it was not just a matter of the fact that their staff wasn't qualified to do form-based or new urbanist comprehensive plans, but just that they were living out of their inboxes. In the time frame they wanted that to be done, it wasn't possible, to ask for their staff to do that. So that's why they decided to have an outside team do this. As far as who implements it, chances are that 99% of the local governments do not have the staff that is trained to do that. St. Lucie County realized that as well. They had invested so much that they decided to hire someone that knows what they're doing. Kara Wood is here. She is the new TVC administrator for St. Lucie County. We are going to be her staff for the next 18 months. So the team continues to be the staff for the administrator at the county. And in the process, we're helping the staff build up a department that can understand this, particularly because in the case of St. Lucie County, they're looking at expanding this countywide. So there's no point in creating this great plan and then handing it over to someone that, has all the good intentions but doesn't understand it.
And just a slightly different response. Sacramento is looking at doing their zoning subsequent to their plan, and they may do it incrementally. Rather than doing a comprehensive citywide rezoning, they may do it by opportunity area or by form type. What their existing zoning seems to work well in the areas where there's not going to be a lot of change. And so rather than going into a massive and very expensive rezoning of the entire city, they're looking at a more incremental process.
That's not illegal?
No. Well, it's not spot rezoning. You're doing it by district, and so you're identifying, yeah, you're creating new zoning classifications within your existing code.
One more question.
Yes, sir.
In terms of tips found by, you sound like most of the projects you already had a little buy-in coming in. If you're trying to convince a group of people that don't know anything about organic codes or think it's kind of high-polluting city stuff or whatever, are there some tips that are, or tips of the trade to get them to buy into this new bang of stuff?
Can I do that one first?
Okay. Table.
Yeah, each one of us will give you our experience. But we were considering when we first started hiring Dr. Phil. I mean, that's how bad it was. It was terrible. It wasn't bad. It was really, really bad. A steering committee, at the time you start with a charrette, to really get the community to get ownership of that and put in the steering committee the people that oppose that the most, because you will have a chance to educate those. Once the rest of the community figures they're educated and support it, they'll start thinking that something is good. In the case of St. Lucie County, it took us over 235 meetings, public meetings of education to do that. So it's just patience and a lot of education and just not giving up. It's hard to do it, you know, in a budget and not lose money, but you have, you know.
We did it in Southgate in 6 meetings. So a little bit different, 6 public meetings, but very different community. But for sound bites, don't mention form-based code. Don't mention new urbanism. Don't mention smart growth. Don't mention any of these buzzwords that we all know. Talk about the outcomes. Talk about what's important to the people. They will come and tell you what is important. Translate what is important to the desired outcomes that they want to see. And don't mention any of these planner jumbo mumbo that we talk about.
Ditto.
Could you follow up with getting in the door, though, because obviously your tool is so strong coming in, but getting in the door, because you at least have a chance to have the meetings with them, if you know you've got that one little short list because of what you submitted, and then you're facing, you know, generic
As a consultant? As a consultant, you basically say what you offer and what the advantages are, and if they don't want to do it, they don't want to do it.
Hard
to get around that.
Yeah, in the case of St. Lucie County, the community was just, I mean, outraged, because when they saw the first two projects come out of the ground in an area that they thought was countryside, they would just pack the commission meetings every single night to scream and yell at their commissioners, and the commissioners had it. They're like, we have to do something because we can't continue to have these types of meetings. And they called for a process, essentially to take the heat off of them and have an outside group say, give us a solution. So until it gets really bad, they probably won't welcome your input.
The other trick is to take the elected officials to someplace where it's working.
Yes. The St. Lucie County officials are all here, and they've been coming to every CNU for the last 3 years. So
make sure there's good restaurants.
Invite them, pay their trip. It's definitely worth it.
For the architects, I have the AIA Continuing Ed form if you need to sign up for credit. Would you join me in thanking these three wonderful speakers? And please, as CNU members, get involved in the initiative for comp plans and new urbanism. We need your input. There are plenty of panels coming up. Please choose one and participate in the rest
right,
of Congress. Thank you.
Hey. I'm Mike Lewin. I teach in Florida Coastal in Jacksonville.
Okay.
So how is what you're doing more? Well, first of all, have you been sued yet?
Yes, actually, it's 18 months. Got challenged, won it, and so it's set precedence for everyone else to go smoothly into the process. Yes. Mm-hmm. We won the lawsuit. We won everything.
What, I've done?
Loves it. everything.
Okay. Cool.
Everything is online. Everything. So, yeah. It was, you know, it was tough for us, but again, we're a public entity, and if anyone can afford to lose, you know, public dollars on a challenge, the public agency, I don't think any of our consultants could have handled the lawsuits by themselves. So we teamed up with the county. Six of whom are here as well, and so there's precedent for everything. It's good. We're happy. That's why I'm walked smiling. You know. Not only is it illegal, but it's been challenged and it's stood up to challenge.
I would have figured 18 months would probably have just got a trial over with.
No. Yeah. Well, no, 18 months was the period of the trial. So, yeah. So it was good. Thank you. It's all online.
But I was just saying it was good. We enjoyed
it.
reading it.
You did? Good. We have the good news is, I mean, the scary part is a lot of people are now starting to take pieces of it.
You lose it.
Yeah, you lose it, I think. You need the courage of someone to do the whole thing. ¿Cómo está? Let's go down here. Good.